Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24/7 home of the black and gold, SNR, Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome to The Drive. I'm Dale Lally. He is the Matt Williamson. We are live here at the NFL meetings in Orlando at the Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah, it's still hopping.
Another beautiful day, still hopping. Lots of stuff happening here over the last 24 hours. Yesterday, Steelers GM Omar Khan met with the media. We talked to him a little bit. This morning, the league passed the new kickoff rule.
Yeah, how about that?
29-3 vote. And so the way this is going to work, Matt, and I just want to let our
Steelers also signed three people, but since we talked about
it. Steelers did that as well. They didn't sign them. They agreed to terms.
Agreed to terms. Yeah.
Semantics.
Now, I get it.
Semantics.
Right.
So
kickoff rule. This is
how it's going to work. The move will dramatically. It's not going to look like anything like it did before.
No, it's going to look like a different sport.
Yeah,
yeah.
So the pass kickoff rule features new alignments of both the kicking and receiving units. There's a landing zone area between the receiving team's goal line and its 20-yard line.
It's like the red zone is the landing zone. Yeah.
That would prompt the action of the kickoff if the ball were to land it in that 20-yard area.
It doesn't matter if it rolls out. I mean, all that stuff changes. It has to land in there, right?
So the kickoffs are going to remain at the 35-yard line. He'll still be at the 35.
Okay, but his teammates won't.
The 10 players in the kicking unit will line up on the opposing team's 40.
Okay, so there's a big gap between those two.
Yeah, well, a 25-yard gap, as it were.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
25 yards, yeah. The receiving team will line up with at least 7 players in the setup zone. The setup zone being a 5-yard area between the 35 and 30-yard lines on their side of the field. So there'll be the 10 yards between those 7 players, at least 7 players, in the receiving
10
team.
10 kickoff guys versus 7 kickoff
at least
return
7.
Guys. At least
you could have more than that,
Probably 5 yards apart.
And there's a maximum of 2 returners that can line up in the landing zone, so inside the 20.
Gotcha. Okay, I didn't understand that part. Okay.
Yeah. After the ball is kicked, the kicker cannot cross the 50-yard line.
Ever, period.
And the 10 kicking team players cannot move until the ball hits the ground or a player in the landing zone or goes into the end zone.
Yes. See, that's a little sticky. Because the same thing's true. I'll let you read it. But, the same thing's true for the return team.
The receiving team's players in the setup zone also cannot move until the kick has hit the ground or a player in the landing zone or the end zone. The returners may move at any time before or during the kickoff.
So the returners can move around as much as they want.
I would think that you would come up with some kind of keywords.
Because I don't want my return team front seven looking backwards.
Right. What you would have is probably your guy who's farthest back, mm-hmm. but closest to the other 7, your other players.
There's a guy in between, like a midfielder.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay,
you have a guy, two. Yeah.
And then maybe two in the
middle. And that guy in the guy who's in the back watches the kickoff, and as it's caught, he yells fire or something like that.
Yeah.
And everybody fires out.
Okay.
That was when I coached baseball on a drop third strike. Especially when I was like first teaching that, the kids didn't know to run on the drop third strike.
I would think not, right? Probably happens a lot when they're young.
As the third base coach, I would just yell fire, and they knew you just take off running.
Okay.
That way they're not looking, or they swing, and they're not looking back at the catcher. You know, just to take off.
And they do stuff like that on punts as well. Get away from the ball, that kind of stuff too. There's all these code words for that.
Here's there's a little graphic here that Tom Pelissero tweeted out. It kind of shows you.
But it looks like Danny or whomever, any special teams coach, has some flexibility
of how many guys you could put
four
in the box,
of his dudes. You know, you could put one in the zone. You could put two in the zone.
Probably want to put two in the zone.
I would
just
think.
Because, yeah.
Unless you only have one good return guy, then they'll kick to the other dude.
Yeah.
And then those other three you could put in the midfield. You could put them up high. You could put them down low. Okay, so that's interesting.
Yeah.
See, a couple things I think are not a problem, but just kind of stick it.
Well, there's
my
some
mind.
Other things with this.
Oh, I know, I know. But just what we were talking about, like as the return team front line, it sounds great to yell fire, but I'm in Baltimore and
right.
I might
you don't
hear,
know.
You know what I mean?
That's
right,
why
right.
I think you have a chain with that.
Yeah.
Or a signal or something.
Because my opponent's only 5 yards away from me.
Or maybe
they're going to leave as soon
maybe
as
maybe you do it to, so you have one of your guys on the sideline. Everybody just watches the sideline and somebody.
And he, bah, yeah. And you run. Okay. Yeah, you got to work that out because you don't want to be laid off the ball with a guy only 5 yards away from you.
Right.
Right.
So penalties on scoring plays also will not carry over and will be taken on the point after attempt. So before you could, okay, say if somebody jumped offside.
Extra point.
We're
going
to choose to take it on the kickoff.
You can't do
you
that.
Can't do that anymore. You have to take it on the point after, which
okay.
could lead to more 2-point tries.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, that's a ripple effect.
Yeah. On any penalty that carries over to a kickoff, the setup and landings, which I guess would be like a personal foul or something like that, mm-hmm. on the point after attempt, the setup and landing zones will not change, nor will the alignment of the 10 kickoff team players and all of the receiving team players, only the kicker's positioning move. So
if this would bump back.
If you
whatever.
Move up to the 50 because of a personal foul, they're still.
They still stay where they're at.
And the kicker can't go past the 50.
Okay, gotcha.
In kickoff scenarios. Kickoffs that hit in the landing zone must be returned. There's no more fair catches.
No fair catches, yeah.
Okay. Kickoffs that hit the landing zone and then go into the end zone must be returned or down by the receiving team. If down, the receiving team gets the ball at its own 20.
But that's risky. If I'm a returner, I'm like, I think that's
going to bounce
into the end
zone. Because they're much closer now.
Yeah, yeah. So you better be pretty sure it's going to go into the end zone to kneel on it. Or you're going to get blasted, right.
Kickoffs that go into the end zone and stay in bounds that are down would give the receiving team the ball at their own 30. So if it rolls in and stays in bounds, you get it at 30. If you kick it through the end zone, you get it at the 20.
If you kick it through the
so kick, if it lands short.
Oh, okay.
And rolls through the end zone, you get it at the 20. If it lands short.
If it lands in the zone.
In the zone, but then stays in play.
Yeah, okay.
You get it at the 30. Kickoffs that go out of the back of the end zone in the air would also go to the 30-yard line.
I know they penalize if you just get the driver out and crush it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kickoffs short of the landing zone would be treated like a kickoff out of bounds, and the receiving team would get the ball at its own 40. So you have to get the ball in that 20-yard area.
Yeah.
If you kick it to the 21, they're getting the ball at the 40.
I think there's no squibs, you know.
That's what it would take out of the game would be the squibs.
Yeah, there's no squibs.
There's
then,
no squib kicks. The legislation also would tweak onside kicks, which can only occur in the fourth quarter and onward and can only be done by a team that's trailing.
You're losing. It's fourth quarter. I guess you don't have to say we're going onside, but it's
no,
pretty...
you do. The kicking team must declare its intent of an onside kick because that changes where everybody aligns.
So that's not. No one's ever going to recover an onside kick, but they don't now, anyways.
Yeah, it's like three all of last year.
Yeah. I mean, it's really a low percentage play, and it sounds like that's not going to change.
Now, this rule is only in place for the 2024 season.
So
they'll review it again in 2025. I would expect they'll probably tweak at the very least tweak it a little bit, and then
it's on a 1 year prove it deal.
Yeah.
So I think it's still true, and I think you said this: if the kicking team kicks it out of bounds, it's the same as it is now.
It's
goes
at the
40.
Okay.
I'm fine with it. I mean, it seems convoluted, but I think we'll get it.
It's
going to
be
quickly.
It's going to be weird the first few times that they do it.
It'll look weird initially, and then I just wonder. Will some smart coach come up with some loophole?
There'll be something that somebody comes up with. I mean, that's just the reality of it. But I think all the league special teams coaches got together on a conference call and talked this through to a certain degree. This has changed from what it initially was.
Yeah.
Is this exactly
what the XFL does, or don't you know?
It's similar, but I think there's some tweaks.
Okay. So a couple things I wanted to bring up about it is I don't think it's an issue, but I'm not an NFL place kicker. I know they all have a driver and they can kick it out of the end zone, more or less. I assume all of them can pull out the 7-iron and drop it in
that
20-hour. I mean, that's probably not difficult for them, right? I mean, I would imagine they can control well enough. I mean, it's a 20
when
by
you get
55.
Into windy situations, that's where
– Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to place it in corners.
Right.
You know,
because
I mean,
if it goes out of bounds, you're one of the 40.
Especially if I'm a returner and, like, this might take a bounce and go out of bounds and I get it to 40. So that's interesting. I'd be interested if I'm a returner, though – do I ever want that ball to hit the ground? Because it could go really badly for me.
It could go, yeah. You know, well, I mean, that's kind of the way it is now.
Because they're on us pretty quick.
Yeah, that's why you put two guys back there. Mm-hmm. I mean, as it is now, most teams put one guy back.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And that's where the teams kick directionally and just kick it out of the edge, and the guy can't get there in time.
Okay. So the other two things, and I brought this up, and I'm not trying to, like, be funny, but when it's a windy day and Lucy goes back and holds the kick, you're at a huge disadvantage. I mean,
I don't know about huge. If they got two guys back,
isn't it 25 yards behind his buddies?
Yeah, but they've got two guys back to return.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume most teams will do that.
Yeah.
So it's even up front then.
Yeah, but instead of running down with my 10, I'm running down with 9.
But they've only got 9 blocking.
Yeah, but I usually have 10. Now I have 9.
Okay, this one goes to 11. You still have the opportunity to tackle the player, or you pop it up. Higher.
Of course. But I'm just taking one of my tacklers and moving him way off the ball to hold this thing.
But they're taking one of their one of their potential blockers, and he's on the other side of the field potentially to return. May not get there in time.
Agreed.
Those guys are there.
So, and then you mentioned the special teams coaches. I don't envy their position.
Not at all. Not at all. We're going to see Danny Smith in OTAs, in mini camps, in training camps, working on this a lot. A lot.
And I assume Coach Tomlin and other head coaches will give his special teams coach a little more time than they usually.
Maybe do a little bit more, yeah.
Because, I mean, otherwise you're taking away from the punt team or, you know, the other stuff you –
the stuff that you have to do.
The other main –
That's the one thing. I don't know if fans who haven't been to training camp practices understand how much special teams work
and how little time they really get, too. I mean, how many different players they have to coach up.
Especially in training camp.
Especially in training
camp. When you've got 90 guys.
Right.
And you're working all – because they're all going to – like. You know these 15 to 20 guys aren't going to be on special teams at all.
Sure, Russell Wilson's not one of them.
But the other 70 players who are on your roster are doing something on special
teams.
And
they're all trying to stand out. And they're all trying to, keep me, coach. You
like
know,
those drills that Danny does where he has the guys practice coming down and running through the gauntlet and then hitting the guy with, like, that's a massive line that they're going through.
It's a lot of human beings running through there, right?
Yeah.
So your guys that make the team don't get as many reps as you think, too. So that brings me to this, too, is like, okay, so usually he can go into a special team session and be like, well, Killebrew knows everything. I have to coach him up. Well, now you got to coach him up
now
at least in one phase. Two phases.
If you're a smart guy, you should be able to pick this up pretty easy.
Of course, but you've never done it.
It's just something new. You'll figure it out. But as you said, there are going to be some nuances to this.
Yeah, I'm wondering where the loopholes are. Like, what coach is going to come up with something clever? You know?
Yeah. And well, Belichick's not around anymore.
No, he's not around anymore.
And Vrabel's not in the league. So.
Yeah, that's true. Well, he's a brownie.
Yeah. So somebody's going to come up with something. I don't foresee. I don't know what it's going to be. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that this is going to have more teams starting at their own 40.
You think? I think there'll be more returns for sure.
There'll be more returns, which are more exciting. But you should get better field position out of it.
I would think.
Which should lend itself to more scoring.
Yeah. And so I'm sitting here thinking, if the ball is set to land in the landing zone, that 20, you know, I would think many returners could at least get it to the 20 or 25.
Yeah.
But they don't have as far the tacklers don't have as far to run either.
Right.
Though,
right.
You know, but they can't leave as early.
Yeah.
So okay, There seems like there's no advantage to hitting a really high pop-up because nobody can do anything until the guy touches it anyway.
That's true, unless you've got the guy holding the ball.
Yeah, that would help. But still, you can't move until somebody touches
it. Well, I would assume he can get up and start going to the 50.
Maybe.
I would assume.
I don't know what
– That's not addressed here. But
yeah,
that's
a weird
– Once he gets up, he can work because the kicker, I assume, once he kicks the ball, can go to the 50.
Okay.
Those guys in the front, from what this says, can't move.
So the
guys who are in the zone.
Yeah. The kicker's never allowed to leave the 50, though, right?
Yeah, he's kind of the safety on the back end.
Okay, so only on a long.
Which is actually good because we've seen some kickers get hurt on these things.
I think that's a good rule to keep kickers healthy. I like that part.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they can't participate, but right.
I wonder if this changes the players that you want to put on punt or kickoff coverage.
I was thinking that, too.
Do you want more speed? Maybe you put a couple of offensive linemen out there.
That's what I was thinking on the return team.
Because there's no, you know, it's a 10-yard period. You're just running. You know, it's not like they're running straight at you and the little guy can dodge him.
Right.
This is a situation where I could put an offensive lineman out there, all my tight ends out there, and put some big bodies and get a wall.
Here comes a 10-man wall of tacklers.
Yeah.
And I only have 5 yards for them to juke me. I definitely want the Darnell Washington.
If I got some, some athlete, if I got a couple of really athletic offensive linemen and are good at hitting guys on the move,
right,
put them out there.
You might drive them into the seats. You know what I mean?
If you get some of my defensive line, when Brett Kiesel used to do that stuff.
To mind. Okay.
You get a really athletic big man and put him out there on that. Just run behind him.
Tight ends like crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe fullbacks, things like that too. Okay.
So that changes some of the body types that you'll see out there, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that's an obvious effect is you're not going to just throw Joe Blow back there as your returner either.
Yeah, this is going to actually
prioritize
matter.
That.
Right. And I wonder if you go for a running back type, or you go you go for more of a speedy type wide receiver who can jitterbug there.
I mean, I'm sure people know this, but as a rule of thumb, punt returners are jitterbug, make the first guy miss.
See, this to me is more like a punt return.
It seems that way too.
Because they're closer.
Because
you're starting closer.
Yeah. So maybe you don't want a tackle breaker, 220-pound running back that takes a little while to get head of steam going.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I do think, like, if I'm a fifth, sixth-round running back, scat back returner type in this draft, I'm pretty happy about this rule.
Yeah.
Like, I might get drafted a round earlier.
Yeah. Like, Calvin Austin. Calvin Austin really hasn't been a kick returner much for the Steelers. But
that was actually my next question.
Now he might be.
Who would your return guy be that's currently on the roster?
I mean, he's your punt returner. I think you just use your punt returners now.
Okay. You don't think it's a back, it's a McFarland type.
I think.
Yeah. I mean, you better be sure-handed because you got
to
field it.
You got to be able to catch the football first and foremost.
Right. Just like a punt.
But secondly, then, you want to be able to have somebody that gets up to speed quickly and can make a guy miss quickly.
I think you have less time to get your acceleration.
In the day, the guy would catch the ball. He'd have 20 yards to build up his – or at least 20 yards to build up his speed.
That's why you want a big guy that can break arm tackles with acceleration.
Now, they're going to be on you pretty quickly.
Yeah, they will. Okay, so maybe you want Antonio Brown type guy back there, you know. Interesting.
So, that's good.
There's a lot of thought.
Different dynamic, but that's the new kickoff rule. That's one of the new ones passed. You mentioned, Matt, that the Steelers have some guys that they agreed with. We're going to take a break, but we'll talk about those guys and what Omar Khan had to say yesterday. We'll do that. When we return, you're listening to The Drive here at the NFL Owners Meetings. He's Matt Williamson. I'm Dale Lally. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24-7 home of the black and gold. SNR. Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dale Lally. He is the Matt Williamson. And Matt, we had a chance to sit down. The Pittsburgh media had a chance to sit down with Omar Khan, the Steelers general manager, yesterday, late in the day. And he actually broke some news.
Yeah, let's go through it.
The signing or the agreements of Quez Watkins, the wide receiver from the Philadelphia Eagles. Also, Dean Lowry, defensive end, who was with the Vikings last year but has spent most of his career with the Packers.
Yeah.
And then quarterback Kyle Allen, who was with the Bills last year, is their backup. But people would know him more with the Carolina Panthers.
He had a pretty extensive season with them.
Yeah.
You know, where he was on, pretty much a full-time player.
He's kind of their starter for the year.
Yeah.
So a quarterback, a defensive lineman, and a wide receiver.
So, needless to say, these aren't earth-shattering moves.
These aren't Patrick Queen.
I mean, these aren't, game-changing moves. But churning that bottom of your roster and having reliable players in those positions at a good price is an art. I mean, that's an important part to roster building, and these guys fit that mold. I don't know this for certain, but I would think, and I haven't seen their contracts, they're not even guaranteed to make the team.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody blows your doors off or they're not what you think they are, you get out of it, you move on. There's probably not much of a dead money or that type of thing set up with these guys. I'm just guessing. But Watkins, to me, is – let's go one by one.
I mean,
Watkins is a speed guy.
Speed guy who's – it's like 64% of his career snaps have come in the slot.
Yeah,
but he's also played
that.
Some outside.
He has.
Yeah.
So that's what I was going to say is I profile him more as an outside guy.
Yeah,
speed
because
guy.
Of the speed, yeah.
He's a little over 6 feet. I mean, he's not a huge dude, but he's built for speed.
A 4.35 guy.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but I think because they had Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown – maybe he kind of got relegated to the slot.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's done two-thirds of his snaps there is great. He's caught just under 100 balls over his career, but he's dangerous. And
about half of his career receiving yards have come after the catch.
Okay, I didn't know that.
He's a guy that I catch the ball and I run by somebody. If you remember, a couple of years ago in the preseason, he got Trey Norwood on
yeah,
the
yeah, yeah,
he
exactly.
ran you know Trey took a bad angle on him and zoom Watkins is off to the races.
Okay, so that's the first I heard that, but it adds up because there's different ways to generate after the catch. You know, AJ Brown catches a slant, shrugs a guy off, and then takes it. Where I think he runs by somebody, you hit him in stride, and the last 40 yard he dances in the end zone, and that's after the catch. I mean, he's a true speedster. But the fact that he's not just outside the numbers is appealing to me. Obviously, Andy Weidel's familiar with him with his Eagles ties, and they must have liked him. I don't know if he has any special teams acumen. Maybe, I know he returned in college. I don't know what he did in the Eagles. I don't think he's a rundown tackle.
He could be a guy that could be your catch
return guy.
That's
what I was thinking, too. Yeah. Right? That's our previous conversation. So I don't know about you, but the way I view the receiver room right now is Pickens is a starter.
Yes.
There's still a hole. I mean, there's still at least one hole. But I look at Jefferson, Austin, and Watkins now as if one of them turns into a quality three, I think that's pie in the sky. But I think all of them are above average fours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe they fight for spots. Maybe they're pure depth.
I mean, Watkins was the three on a team that went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, that was his role in Philadelphia. He started quite a few games. He started 25 games in his career out of the 40. He hasn't missed any games in his career.
No, right.
Like, he didn't start right away. He was a sixth-round draft pick of the Eagles. He broke into the lineup late that season and basically hasn't missed a game since.
And he's not really a finesse guy. I mean, you'd think a lot of these speedsters are track guys and, you know, with pads on. But he'll block a little bit. He does some contested catch stuff. I mean, he'll fight for the football. I think I would give him the leg up of the three to be highest on the depth chart if they were to break today.
Yeah.
They're different. Calvin's small, and we know what he is. Jefferson's not as fast as these guys, but he's probably the best route runner.
Yeah.
So they're varied skill sets, and I think right now you have a 1/2 and 3/4.
Yeah.
You know, or 3.5.
I think Pickens is a 1.
Yeah.
I think he is emerging emerging as a one. Even if you look at AJ Brown's seasons with Arthur Smith, he didn't have 90 plus catches in those seasons.
No, Corey Davis was very involved.
Corey Davis was very much involved too. Yeah,
right.
It was 65, 70 catches for 1,300 yards because of the run after the catch ability. I think Pickens has some of that ability.
Oh, he showed a lot of it last year.
Clearly,
he's the Steelers' one as it stands, you know.
Yeah.
If you could get someone equal to him or in that neighborhood, now you're cooking.
You're also, I think, looking at maybe a potential for Pat Freiermuth to potentially be that number two.
Oh, I think his production's going to spike, without question.
And just say that he's our number two receiver,
and
these other guys are all they're all complementary to what those to Pickens and Freiermuth.
Spokes in the wheel, yeah. So no, it's a perfect example of lessening your need going into the draft. It's you know what you're getting. It's a bird in the hand. Hopefully, you could draft or acquire somebody that's a clear 1/2 type guy.
The fact that you got a guy who can play outside. You got guys that can play outside. You got guys that can play inside. Mm-hmm. Now you can do whatever you think you need to do in the draft. If there's a good slot there, you take him.
Yep.
If there's a good outside there, you take him.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Kind of like we've talked about in the past. You know, everyone looks at this team, and I'm not just lumping all fans together. Like they better draft a corner. Well, they better draft someone to play the slot.
You know, they need a slot corner.
Right.
I think that's a definite need, and Mike Tomlin has much said so when he spoke the other day. But they could take whatever they want. If there's another Pickens-type guy there, they could take him.
Or a Malik Washington from Virginia. You could move him to the slot and move people around. So you do have more puzzle pieces that fit in a lot of spots.
Yeah.
Talking about the other two dudes?
Yeah. Lowry, to me, is interesting. He started a ton of games in his career.
Yeah, he's played a lot of football, right?
Played a lot of football. In fact, if you look at it, he's 6'6".
Mm-hmm.
Basically about 300 pounds. He's in his ninth season.
He kind of has the Keystone Aaron Smith look to him. You know,
He's a classic 3-4 end body type.
Yeah.
And you look at it, he ran a 4.87.
No, see, he's not a combine. Bad athlete. Right.
Yeah, he's a really good athlete. He's not been a big sack guy.
No.
But
no.
I don't know that – I don't know what he was asked to do in Green Bay. Were they asked to take on double teams, or were they asked to get to the passer?
I think they're mostly a 3-4-ish. You know, Kenny Clark was the nose when he was there. I mean, he did what, 1 year in Minnesota last year with Coach Flores.
Which was kind of, you know.
And he got hurt at the end, too, right?
Yeah, he was playing more defensive tackle in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Whereas in Green Bay, he was playing more outside, on the over the tackle.
So my take on him is I think he's a similar move to Amani Watts a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
he's except Watts could play some nose for you. That was your
They're a little bit different.
Yeah.
I mean, and Lowry's a little taller, longer, more Aaron Smith-ish. You know, but again, if you would draft one super high, I don't know that he's guaranteed a spot on the roster, but I think he's got pole position to be on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, he's more of an established veteran that
you know what you're getting.
You know what you're getting. He's, if you had to line up with him, in week 17 in Baltimore, it's not going to overwhelm him. He's played a lot of football.
And you couple him with Neal, Loudermilk, Adams as your depth guys, and you can be fine.
Neal's not a depth guy. Neal is a
– or Liao, I meant.
Liao, I see.
I didn't say the wrong name. L, not N. You don't have to – my take was I don't think you have to draft one.
If there's one available, same thing with the wide receiver.
Right.
You can do it.
It's a speed bump, but it's not a roadblock.
Right.
So in terms of, boy, Rook is here in the third round. I can't believe it. I'm going to run the podium.
Take him, yeah.
Take him. But if you don't get any – okay, you can live with it. So I like that signing. It makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
It's a good depth piece.
Kyle Allen, we've talked a lot about the Allens who are not Josh Allen.
Not Josh Allens, yeah. The not-so-great Allens, yeah.
But you're not bringing him in as your backup.
No.
He's your three.
See, my
He's fighting for your three. You're going to still draft a quarterback.
See, that's what I was going to ask you. I was like, I think it's the same thing.
Or
like,
bring in an undrafted
rookie.
There's
going to be a young guy in
camp. There'll
be
another arm in
camp.
There's
no question about that. But I don't think you have to draft one.
You don't have to,
You don't have to. But I think the beauty of him is – I don't think he needs a ton of reps to be Kyle Allen on opening day.
Yeah, he's going to be holding the clipboard. He's going to be, your emergency quarterback on game days if he beats out whatever
whoever that fourth
guy is. And he's started games in the NFL and had some success.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a starter. He never will be. No one thinks he's going to revitalize career here and light the world on fire. He did have 1 year with the Panthers where he started a lot of games.
He was their starter,
Pretty much, I think he had like 17 touchdowns versus 16 picks. I mean,
wasn't great. If you remember that season, he started off on fire.
Yeah, super hot.
The majority of those touchdown passes came in like his first six or seven games, and then the interceptions started piling up.
I mean, I wonder if
they probably figured him out a little bit.
They probably went through the league and realized he couldn't hit the curveball or whatever it is. I mean, he's not physically overwhelming or any of those type of things.
But he's got, I mean, his career pass rating is 82.2.
Yeah.
Which, okay, if that's your number three.
That's what I was going to say is I think a lot of teams – well, they have looked at him as their two.
Yeah.
And if he's your three, well, then that's a high-end three.
I
mean, he can play. He can get you out of games. He can certainly handle emergency situations. If he has to start for a week, you might be competitive.
I mean,
it's not just throwing somebody off the strap heap.
Yeah, it's not going to be, we got to go out there and run the ball 72 times because he can't complete a pass.
I mean, frankly, it's not Duck Hodges, coming in there. Yeah.
Now, he is different from your other two quarterbacks. He's not a runner.
Yeah, I don't think he's a stiff, but I don't think he's going to run any of that.
He ran a 4.71 at the combine, but he really has—he's more of a pocket passer.
Yeah.
That's what he is.
He's not an athlete, creator, tuck the ball and run type guy. If there's something there, he can get it slide and pop up and get you something. But so no, I think that's a good signing. Again, I do think you have to draft a receiver. I don't think you have to draft a D lineman. I don't think you have to draft a quarterback.
Yeah, you don't have to draft. I mean, you can sign whoever now.
Yeah.
As a again, if there's a quarterback there who you really like in the fourth round or in the sixth round, you're like, oh, I can't believe this guy's still there. The kid from Florida State.
Well, he wouldn't even need reps either.
Yeah, you're gonna put him on scholarship for the year. Okay.
Yeah, he can still be around.
Yeah.
So we talk about this a lot, and we do a bunch of mocks and things. I'm interested in a Rattler or a Pratt or him or Leary from Kentucky or something. If the price is right and there's not something screaming at me that I have to have in the draft.
Especially late in this draft.
Yeah. I'm thinking like fifth round, fourth round, something like that.
Yeah.
However, I also want a lot of preseason reps to go to Fields.
Right.
I
mean, that's the issue. Yeah. That's why the Florida State.
He doesn't impinge upon that.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, he's not going to he's on scholarship for the year. So
I think that's part of the signing is we don't need to do a lot of work with Allen to get him ready to be our three. So that's just more work for Fields,
The one thing, again, as we talked to Omar Khan yesterday, he was asked about the center position because that's the one now that's screaming.
I still think receiver is too.
You have enough guys there now that if you had to play tomorrow.
Yeah.
you'd be okay. We got enough guys to get us through this game, and we'll be fine. The center position, I don't know that they have that, and that's nothing against Nate Herbig.
I've always thought he's a guard.
Yeah,
I mean, especially a scheme like this that wants a mobile center. That's not really his bag.
I mean, I'm sure he could do it, or Spencer Anderson, or moving James Daniels over to center. Those are things break glass if necessary.
I say you don't do that now.
Yeah,
I mean, if you're going into camp and you found a guard, you might have a conversation with Daniels saying, "What do you think about moving back to center?"
Yeah,
or there's a chance they like Spencer Anderson more than our listeners.
I mean, he'll certainly get opportunities this year.
Yeah.
If they don't do something else at that position.
But I wouldn't be comfortable saying you're the opening day starter.
Yeah.
You know,
and Omar basically said, look, we've got, you know, everything, all the options are still open. There's still some guys out there that we could sign in free agency.
Yeah.
That we could take a look at. There still may be some trades opportunities that pop up.
Yeah, when he said that, I haven't scanned the league, but what centers could be available?
Well, if somebody takes one of those young centers in this draft, if they get beaten, now all of a sudden those opportunities become available.
Yeah.
Let's say for example, Atlanta takes one.
Oh, then you call about their guy, right?
Yeah, you just call that team about their current guy, and you say, okay, you just drafted one of the – because those centers those top three centers are going to go pretty early.
Yes, I think they'll all be top 51 picks.
Yeah, right.
on purpose, right?
You know, so if those three teams that take them and the Steelers get shut out on that, now you call those other who's available? Mm-hmm. You start making the phone calls. Who's available via trade?
So I haven't done this homework, but it wouldn't be all that hard to do. I would look at teams like the Steelers that have a new coordinator / new system. Like, hey, we love the center. He doesn't fit in quite what we want to do. So he walks into a situation that's not best for him. Or I would look at teams that a year from now that have a center with an expiring contract. You know, like those are the guys you could probably pry away. I don't know what that list is off the top of my head, but it would be hard to generate.
It's center,
right, yeah.
Absolutely. But, so there are still options out there. And the other thing that he stressed, he's like, you know, the key with this whole situation, with everything in free agency, is patience.
Yes.
You have to have patience.
I was joking on another airway. I mean, I think Omar's got alligator blood. I mean, he's from Rounders. You know, I mean, it's got alligator blood. He just waits and waits and waits, and eventually he pounces on his prey, because I would be so much more anxious and show my hand than the Steeler front office has of late.
I mean, it's like playing poker, as you mentioned. You're sitting there, and you don't know what everybody else has. You have a pretty good idea what their hand is.
But you don't know their intentions.
Intentions are. You don't know if they're going to double down or what they're going to do. But you just have to wait it out and be patient. Mm-hmm. And at some point, something will materialize that will help solve your problem.
And
it won't be the ideal solution to your problem.
Might not be a plan A.
Right.
Yeah, right. Plan A probably went and gone in free agency, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought there's a good chance they'd sign a center, but at those prices, I could see why they wouldn't. And we have countless examples, but Joe Hayden's the best one to me. There's a lot of time between now and opening day.
Oh, yeah.
Good
stuff
guys
happens.
Get cuts. Yeah. I mean, you want to be able to pounce on those dudes. Or Connor Williams is back to Hawks.
All of a sudden,
whatever.
Yes.
Right.
He's out now. You got video of him running and stuff like that.
Or someone gets cut late you didn't think would be there. So there's opportunities will arise. And I like the word patience you use there. I think that's important in this process.
Absolutely. We're going to get to another break. That's our next step in this process.
There we go,
He is Matt Williamson. I'm Dale Lally. We are here at the NFL spring meetings where everything is happening around the league here. Seen a lot of news and notes. But I wanted to get back to draft stuff in the next segment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We got a little piece here that put out by our buddy Lance Sierlein on NFL.com ranking the positions in this year's draft.
Oh, okay. That's
we'll take a look at that. So we'll do that when we return. You're listening to Steelers Nation Radio.
This is The Drive with Dale Lally and Matt Williamson on your 24-7 home of the black and gold. SNR. Steelers Nation Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dale Lally. He is the Matt Williamson. And as I mentioned there before the break, Lance Sierlein, who does all the scouting stuff and the draft preview stuff, a lot of
great
it anyways,
work,
for NFL.com. He does
all those player write-ups.
Yeah, he does the vast majority of them. He put together his rankings of the 11 positions in this year's draft in the order that he believes they fall in terms of strength. And the way he did this year, he said, here's the criteria he used. He said, I identified star caliber players, future starters, and overall depth. Generally speaking, he concentrated on prospects who are most likely to be drafted in rounds 1 through 5.
Okay.
and he weighed star players and future starters twice as heavily as overall depth, and his scale ranged from 10 to 30 points.
Oh, wow. He's really technical about
yeah,
this.
Okay. So this is, yeah, I wanted to get that out of the way because he puts point values on some of these things. So he is offensive.
He's kind of not talking about it. You could get this guy in the sixth round, the sixth, seventh round, especially in this draft, aren't real strong.
Yeah.
You're right.
Offensive tackle, he assessed at 26 points.
That's number one?
That's number one. Hard to argue with that.
I gotta say, it's an unbelievable group. Yeah. I mean, there is depth, but the first round stuff is
crazy,
insane.
Yeah.
And I can't say it enough, and I don't know if it'll go this way, but the league is giving you red paint, and rarely do they give you red paint. Paint that barn red.
He says he can see at least seven tackles picked in the first round, with starters still to be found on day two, and quality depth lasting into the fifth round.
Hmm. One question I have, and I don't have the answer to this, is I'm sure tackles will fall more than they usually do in the depth world, second, third, fourth rounds. You know, because teams that take one probably won't take a second.
Right.
You know? I mean, so you pull some people out of the fishing pool, you know. But that's still not a position that falls, I mean,
yeah.
No matter what. I mean, I'm sure they'll get scooped up pretty quick.
At number two, he has wide receiver at 24.5 points, so not far off.
I'd say it should be right there.
Yeah. You know, he mentions the top of the class, Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunzier. Mm-hmm. But then he says, you know, you start looking at the guys that could be available on day two, which is where I'm interested here.
Yeah, yeah.
Ladd McConkey, Roman Wilson, Malachi Corley, Xavier Leggett, Troy Franklin, Ricky Pearsall. I mean,
it's a sweet spot.
I take any of those guys.
I take all those guys. Right? There's probably even more names.
That group is really attractive.
Yeah. So
for what you're paying for them.
For what you're paying for them. I think day two is a great spot to shop for receivers, and there's all shapes and sizes. We talked about the first segment. They could take any type, too. They're not pigeonholed for a slot or an outside. I think there's a chance two or three receivers will come off the board before any tackles.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably a real good chance. At least one will, I'm sure. How many first-round receivers do you think end up happening? Five?
Four or five, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Chiefs at the end.
Might get six,
McConkey or somebody like that, but yeah. So, no, it's a great group. I mean, again, go shopping there.
Yeah. He says, you know, even in that day three, there'll be some prospects that maybe need a little bit of polishing with some stuff, but they're starting caliber players that you can get in that top 100.
Yeah. I mean, even like the Holy Cross kid, you know.
Yeah.
Like, he's probably not coming to start, but there's a lot to work with there.
Yeah.
You know, right.
His number three position is quarterback, which is kind
of. I agree with that. Right.
I think they're, because of the star power that you have at the top.
I mean, his criteria were future starters.
Yeah.
And I think there's four to six future starters in there in the next 2 years.
He says, I expect we'll see four passers go in the top 10 again this year.
Maybe top four.
Could be. And he said we might even see four selected in the top four picks.
Okay.
He says that.
Yeah, yeah.
The draft is heavier on potential star power than usual. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy. See, there's also potential starters in Bo Nix, Michael Penix, while there's also good depth within that first 50 picks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a rattler or something.
But after
like
that, it kind of falls off.
Yeah, I don't want to be shopping too deep into day three for that.
Yeah. At four, this was kind of surprising to me. He has edge defenders.
Really? I mean, we haven't done a ton of work on
22 points.
Them. Okay. I mean, there's probably four first-rounders.
Yeah, he has.
I don't think there's any stars, though.
The group has legitimate potential star power with Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, Leitu, and Chop Robinson.
Okay.
And then he says there's some guys in that lower round, like Austin Booker or Marshawn Nyland or Adisa Isaac, could be day two guys that could develop into solid starters.
We haven't done a lot of talking about the day two edge dudes, but it is a decent class. I mean, I'm splitting hairs, but one thing I would argue with them is I don't know that Latu or Verse has a super high star ceiling, you know, where I think the other two in the first round might if they hit.
He has cornerback at only 17 points, tied with interior defensive line.
Really? I think corner's a lot better than interior.
Here's the thing at cornerback, and I've had some people ask me about this on social media. There's not the star power
at corner
in this draft. But there's a lot of dudes.
There's a lot of dudes.
It's like the wide receiver position without the guys
without
in the top
Harrison.
Ten.
Yeah, exactly.
He said, look, players that could go late day one, early day two, Enos Rakestraw, Cooper DeJean, Kool-Aid McKinstry. You'd be happy to get those guys.
Yeah.
Early in day two.
TJ Tampa might be in that conversation. There's a handful of them. And, again, I think sweet spot-wise is another day two position to go shopping in, you know?
Yeah. And I think if you're looking for slot cornerbacks.
Yeah, there's plenty.
There's a lot to pick from in this group.
They usually go a round later or so, too.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to go top of the draft. I am curious, who is the first corner off the board and how early does he go?
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting part of it.
I bet not in the top 10.
Those receiver, the receivers, the quarterbacks, and the offensive tackles are going to dominate early.
Yeah.
Interior defensive line.
That would be low for me.
There are some, you know, if you look at it strictly from a Steelers perspective, mm-hmm. with what they're looking for, the guys who are 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", it's slim
there's
pickings.
There's not a lot of them, yeah.
If you're looking for a Byron Murphy, you're looking for a Jerzon Newton.
Yeah.
You look, you know, T'Vondre Sweat. These guys are, you know, those guys are available. Michael Hall mm-hmm. is another one of those guys at 6'2".
Yeah, I think he's going to go reasonably high.
Yeah, that don't really fit into what the Steelers would want from a defensive line.
The LSU kid, is it Mingo or Wingo that was a great tester, but this doesn't really fit the Steelers.
Yeah.
There are more bowling balls types.
Yeah, those kind of guys are available. There aren't the classic Steelers 3-4 defensive ends.
The Forrest Buckners.
At 7, he has interior offensive line at 16.5 points. That would be centers and guards.
I wish you broke it down into the two, but, I mean, that's hard to do. I mean, when we do lists, we always do interior two. Because I just think center is a lot better than guard.
Yeah, he says Graham Barton, Jackson Powers, Johnson come off the board in the first round as centers who can also play guard. That's what makes that tough.
Yeah, there are
somebody could see them and, hey, we're just going to put him at guard for a year, and maybe 2 years from now we put him at center.
I mean, that's why they lump them together. I get that. I just think the center group is better than the guard group.
You know, he said teams that will be able to go into the fourth round and maybe even round five to find future starting centers this year.
See, people don't think of that. I mean, there's a lot of our listeners, and I understand
it. But that's
it.
Future starting centers.
Right. I think a lot of people say they have to get Frazier or Barton, or Powers Johnson. And I understand that. I mean, if any of them's going to be a pouncy type force, it's going to probably be one of those three.
But you can get Bordellini, or you can get, you know.
The Penn State guy's all right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's three or four others that you'll get round three or later that isn't
that might
the
be
end
your
of
guy.
The world.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a fallback plan there.
Yeah. At 8 is running back with just 14 points.
Yeah.
Nobody in the first round.
No.
I think if Jonathan Brooks were healthy,
I think he'd be a borderline first.
He'd be a top 50 guy.
Yeah.
But he's not.
And I don't think any will be off the board when the Steelers pick in round two.
It's a good chance.
Yeah,
good chance.
I was talking about this on a different outlet that I don't think you want to be – I think running back's going to be a game of chicken that isn't going to really involve the Steelers. But if you're one of the first two
or Dallas,
three teams –
you're Dallas, you know, one of these teams that really needs one.
I don't want to be the team that picks first. I want to get the fifth back at a discount. And I think there will be – and Steeler fans will love it – some point in this draft,
run.
There's going to be a run.
Yeah,
I think there.
You see teams wanting to trade up to get into that run.
Yeah, I could see 8 of them going in 15 picks all of a sudden in the late third round or something.
As he said, there's you'll probably see as many as six backs go in the top 100 picks, and that's how that could work. Let's say that run started at 45-ish.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be fantastic.
I'm thinking it'd be like 65-ish.
Yeah.
Even
that would
even
help.
Still be fine.
That helps you with your third round pick at 84.
Absolutely.
If a bunch of those backs start to fall off the board.
Yeah. Like when they pick in the second round, I think that most there'll be one gone. Let's say there's zero. But when they pick in the third, the next pick,
so those
be
six guys
six
could have
or
gone.
Seven
yeah.
Gone. Right. Yeah.
So that's interesting. Tied for 8 at 14 points is tight end.
It's pretty rough.
It's pretty rough.
I mean, I had a hard time.
And that's with Brock
together.
Bowers.
That's with Brock Bowers on the potential top 10 pick. That's a Kyle Pitts, you know, like type prospect that's going to go high. I had a hard time putting together 5 that I was thrilled with.
Yeah,
you know, my top 5.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
It was
because some of the other positions, like when we were putting together our offensive tackle triple take.
Oh, there was 100 I won.
There were first round guys that didn't make the top 5.
Yeah, I mean, if
you're putting
Mims
together
doesn't make your top 5, yeah,
you're putting something together your top 5 tight ends.
Yeah,
they're like 6 round picks.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, I don't think either one of us had Mims or Guyton in our tackle list.
Yeah.
But if they were a similar tight end prospect, they would have been 2.
Right.
I mean, easily. You know,
yeah.
Slam dunk. You know, so
no
that
doubt.
Just shows.
And then finally, the last two, safety, 13 points.
You know this better than I do because you do the editing, but.
That was another tough one.
Mike Pursuta, you and I do our.
We did that one just dropped today.
Okay, go look that up, guys, because you're going to see more than 5 names on there. I mean, there's a lot of variance in our top 5, and I had a real hard time putting that list together.
There are some guys that I do like in those second and third rounds.
Yeah, I do too.
But they're second and third rounders, maybe even into the fourth round.
Maybe the fourth.
You know, Tyler Newbin to me stood out.
I thought he was clearly one.
Yeah.
And
I think we all had him one. And then, you know, then it's Dadrian Taylor-Demerson or Cole Bishop or, mm-hmm. you know, Javon Bullard.
I mean, the Miami kid Kitchens or the USC kid Bullock were pretty high name, high pedigree guys.
They didn't make my top five.
I wasn't that blown away by them. They weren't my top five either.
And then finally, true linebackers at 11, which again is why the Steelers' Patrick Queen signing.
Well, that's what I was
huge.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, is that number? Is that the last one?
That's the last one. 11 points, and you're looking. He says he believes it's unlikely a linebacker is taken in the top 40 this year.
I can see that. I mean, I can see that. Maybe somebody loves Wilson from NC State if he's clean. Maybe
Pursuta.
Pursuta does. A&M Kim's intriguing.
Yeah.
And I think there could be a little bit of run on those top guys early round two.
If you really need one.
Yeah.
Kind of like the running backs position.
Exactly.
If you have an opening there, you're going to jump on it because it's pretty thin.
And sort of like safety, there's some fourth rounders I wouldn't mind having at that cost.
Yeah, it's developmental guys. But I wouldn't want to have to start them right away. There's like two or three guys in this draft that I'd be like, okay, I could put this guy in my lineup in day one. He's not going to be a star.
He might be the answer.
But he might be the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas, and then the guys after that are like, okay, he's going to take a year or two to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, do you want to wait on that?
So if you work backwards off this list, you know, the scarcest positions in the draft, but where was the Steelers' biggest splash? At the 11th, scarce position.
Linebacker, safety.
Safety was another guy they went outside the organization. They're agreeing with you. I mean, they went shopping so they don't have to go drafting in the shallow waters. You know,
absolutely.
Go in the deep waters.
Which is smart. It's smart business.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how you set up a team well and get the most out of your picks.
Absolutely. So that was Lance Sierlein's rankings of this the depth of this draft. Again, offensive tackle number one, wide receiver number two, quarterback three, edge defender four, cornerback five, tied for fifth with interior defensive line, which I'm surprised was that high.
Mm-hmm.
It's seven interior offensive line, eight running back, nine tight end, tight end, 10 safety, and 11 linebacker. And that, you know, when we saw him free agency, a lot of the guards signed. Could be the same thing that the league was telling us, like, oh, we got to go get these interior offensive linemen. We're going to have to pay for them this year because this top of the board, especially a guard,
just like
the true
said,
guard types,
and all the running back movement early indicated they don't want to go shopping here. But the four scarcest positions are ones I don't think the Steelers even care if they draft.
Yeah,
you know,
especially not now.
Right as it stands right now.
Absolutely.
Right, so that's good stuff.
Let's get to another break. He is Matt Williamson. I'm Dale Lally. You're listening to The Drive. We are live here at the NFL meetings here and in Orlando, and we'll be back
one,
and forth.
Right?
You can watch the show, of course, again on the Steelers YouTube channel as well. Go ahead and check that out. We appreciate you doing it, and also, you know, subscribe to that channel because
Absolutely. All
kinds of good content on there. Sit down interviews just from down here with Mike Tomlin, with Omar Khan. Lots of good stuff there available on there. They do a lot of special programming as well. Some really fun shows that these guys put together, Gerard and Emil here. They help out with those things. Check those out. We're going to get to a break. We'll be back with hour number two right after this.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.